This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson.
There, recording here.
And joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rahm.
My allergies have been a little bad lately. Oh yeah, let me record here as a backup.
Today, we're taking you into the truck for a live broadcast. From producer to director, TD, AD, A1, shader, and graphics, Brock is going to walk us through different positions for a live production, helping us understand their role in the truck environment. Should we try again?
Yeah, let's try again. Let's go on 10.
Yeah, we're just off today.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll make it work.
Yeah, all good. Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Oh, listening back to that conversation that you and Garrett had with Becca that I unfortunately had to miss, and now we're missing Garrett today for this conversation. But one of the things that really stands out to me when, you know, working with Becca, going out to X Games, and is the trailer. And that was really my first really big introduction into how a lot of that worked. You know, going in and out of the trailer, going in and out of the trailer to go talk to, you know, the production truck, and just seeing that production truck layout and all the different people who go in and out, how the camera operators interfaced. And that was just a really cool experience for me. And I, one of the things that stands out to me is when we were in LA for an X Games, you know, all the runners were at the same hotel, and we, after one of our long days, we went out up to the pool area, and there was another runner there that we didn't know, but he was hanging out, and he was trying to tell us what he did that day. And he goes, "I got to do this hero sheet." We're like, "Okay." But this is so cool. It's this big, important job. And basically what it was is he created headshots on a sheet of paper and put names, because it was X Games, just names, but sometimes you'd have names and numbers on that sheet. And that for the videographers that were coming from or didn't know who all the athletes were, and they could have it. If you walk into a basketball arena, a lot of them put it on the stanchion. So when the director or producer calls for a specific player for a hero shot, that they could easily identify and find them. So I think it's just an interesting way to go about making sure that you're prepared and ready. And that's one of the things that we wanted to talk about today, is making sure that you understand all the different positions, what goes into this, into the trucks, and how they all operate together. And that's really why Brock is here and helping us understand all this stuff from a technical standpoint. He has quite a bit of experience in that.
Yeah, I remember it's funny because there's a lot of terms for a lot of different things. There's a lot of names for a lot of different jobs. And you actually just used a term there for something that I created every single game I've ever directed in my entire life. I've never heard it called hero sheet, but that makes a ton of sense. I was like, hero sheet, what's he talking about? I just call it heads, or I call it part of my paperwork. But across this industry, there's no right or wrong. There's just a lot of different terms for a lot of different things. I remember being back, and it can be hard. You don't learn a lot of this stuff in school. You have to learn a lot of it on the job. I remember being at Husker Vision in college, and I used to think a technical director and a director were the same thing. I thought the person who pushed the buttons was a person who called the shots. And the reason behind that was because at Husker Vision, our shows were small enough that you could TD and direct at the same time. But then I did my first truck job in college, and I saw that there was a director, and the technical director was just doing what he said. And I thought that was so weird. And through my career, I've been very, very fortunate to work alongside or be around basically every major sports network, from CBS to ESPN to Fox to NBC. And everybody does it a little bit differently, but there's a lot of there's a lot of universal crossover between the positions and the roles, even if they're called totally different things.
Yeah, I think you highlighted something there that's probably important, because that's exactly how I understood it too. You know, when I was at Illinois, we had Daryl on here. He would be the TD and the director, and Andy would be over in the stadium or in the arena and producing from there, and kind of being the eyes in the area or of the production. Yeah, so I guess that's a place that we should start with the director and TD and producer, and then we can kind of work our way down to some of the other jobs. So let's start with producer, because they're the person who really runs the show.
Right, and I think you highlighted a key difference there. A producer's role is going to be totally different between an in-venue stadium video board show versus a TV truck or a television production out of a control room or a Remy site. And the big reason behind that is a producer for a live event has to worry about more than just the images that go on screen. They have to worry about all the logistics of what's going on with the court, going on with marketing, fan reaction. To me, one of the bigger differences is generally, and this is not a hard, fast rule, in a truck, a producer will call replays, right? They're the ones queuing up replays, working with tape and getting those going. Whereas in a video board world, rarely will the producer call replays. That's usually a director, or at Notre Dame, we had a very large replay show. So I had a replay producer, and that's what they did. I think about it as a producer in a live video board show is worried about the big picture, right? What's going on everywhere, the aesthetic of the show, the atmosphere, how everything's reacting on court, flow. Whereas a producer in a television environment is really there to produce storylines, right? And make sure the game is covered in a way that tells a good story. And their main responsibilities are working with tape, working with graphics, and then working with talent. They really leave the aesthetic of the show and the timing, for the most part. It's not really the timing, but the director, kind of sets the pace. Whereas the director on a video board side, in my opinion, has a little bit more responsibility, where they're generally worried about every single thing that goes on that screen in conjunction with the producer. And they generally have to call their own replays. So that's kind of the difference. And I know we went over it a little bit there, but, you know, producer, in my opinion, is also doing a lot of pre-production work on the television side with graphics. They're going through every single graphic. They're usually the one providing graphic ideas initially, storyline ideas. The producer on the television side is also in charge of hunting down those storylines before you ever even get on site, talking to the SIDs, talking to the players, getting photos, doing all that stuff that takes like 5 seconds on air. Takes a really long time for the producer during the week to prepare and execute. So it is that seamless.
I remember being in the room when we were playing the Cavaliers when LeBron was in Cleveland before game 7, and they actually did their pre-meeting in that room. And the producer was like, the focus here is storytelling. I need a couple of you to be on the losing team, a couple of you to be on the winning team. Obviously there was going to be a champion from that game. And he was really just driving home, trying to make sure that people didn't get caught up in the excitement of the game, and that they still did their jobs that they needed them to do, because a big part of the story is the team that loses is also going to have that look of defeat and disappointment, whereas the winning team is going to celebrate a lot longer. So that was something that he was trying to hit home there. And I thought that was interesting. And I think that was one of the first times that I had actually heard a producer really talking about story from that way, from a live side. But it was really interesting to hear.
So I'd imagine it could have been the producer, but I'd imagine that would have been the director having that meeting. Generally, it's the director's job to be in charge of where cameras are and when and how they cover certain moments. And I talked about it earlier with paperwork. Directing, not that I'm a good director, I'll never say I'm a good director, but directing is one of my favorite things to do. and a big part of directing in a live television environment is being prepared for those types of things and having scenarios for it. So I have, and maybe I can share some of this as an example in this episode, but I create basically scenarios for every single game. One of my favorite sports to direct is hockey, and I would have scenarios for home goal, away goal, penalties, shootouts, overtime, going to intermission, coming back from intermission. And we would go through all of that in the pregame meeting, because I never wanted to leave anything up to chance. I wanted my camera operators to be able to just execute based on our meeting and based on a sheet of paper I gave them, and me not have to explain what I wanted in the moment, because that's going to take way too long and then the moment's going to pass and be gone. So the director is really in charge of visually what goes on air. And I think I liked a lot of that, because you can be artistic in a way. And you can tell a story visually, and if you do it right, there's it's extremely rewarding, right? Because it's not like a commercial shoot where you can do 30 takes and get a perfect shot or have the lighting be perfect. But I'm sure we've all seen it. You know, in the NBA finals, in the national championship for the CFP, those perfect moments of dejection, the perfect moments of, I hate to bring it up, but the other day, you know, Texas UT lost to Oklahoma in 4 overtimes, and they cut away from it really quickly. But at the end, they just got this girl who was a UT fan just flipping off Oklahoma, right? And like, yeah, that's bad. You don't want to put it on TV, but what a perfect visual moment to tell that story and represent it, right? And that happened live. And that only happened live because that director had his cameras. He had a good camera crew, he or she. And they executed on a plan that they already had. I guarantee there were overtime scenarios and losing team go to this on losing team, go to this on winning team, et cetera, et cetera. So just as much as the producer from a live television perspective has to prepare and pre-plan, the director has to do that just as much. The director is also working directly in conjunction with the technical director who's executing the technical side of the show on the switcher. And it's super important they're in sync, and where things can get weird. And I've TD'd a lot of linear television as well. But the vernacular and the verbiage can be different between directors, because there's no hard, fast rule. So it's always good if you're directing or you're TDing to sit down together and say, okay, what are you calling this? How are we doing this? So mine is always, ready one, take one, ready two, take two, ready three, take three. Some people will be standby one, take one. Some people will just be like, ready one, take, ready two, take. And if you're not prepared for that and you're used to ready two, take two, and you're TDing and somebody says, ready two, take, you look over at them and say, take what? What do you mean? What are you going to call replay wipes? Are you going to call them effect? Are you going to call them animate? Are you going to call them transition? I do effect. So if I'm going to a replay, ready replay two and effect two, right? That's just my cadence. That feels natural to me. But if my TD doesn't know that and they're waiting for some other call, you could be sitting there waiting for a really, really long time. As a director, you also are in charge of making sure your TD's elements are all right. You know, generally when you're in a truck, that truck and that TDE, they're going all over the place. They're doing 10 different shows, potentially for 10 different networks with 10 different elements. And the last thing you want to do, and I've totally been there and I've totally done it, is have an NBC element show up on ESPN. I've had that happen before as a TD. We were doing ESPN soccer, and I had a memory stored on my switcher that was a split screen, and I hit the wrong button and I wiped to an NBC split screen. It was very subtle, but there was an NBC peacock in the background, and that's a big no-no. Nobody was that upset about it, but it was still, it's one of those things as a director too, you know, you need to make sure that your TD is buttoned up. Usually you're giving them an element list ahead of the time of like, here's the transitions I'm going to use. Here's the replay wipes I'm going to use. A lot of that's mandated by the network, and a lot of networks, especially ESPN, the ESPN College Basketball Project for elements is hundreds of elements, right? And you're not going to use all of those, and it's insane for your TD to program all of those. So it's important for the director to come in with a sheet and say, like, here's the 10 I'm going to use. This is all you have to worry about, right? As opposed to, here's the 100 I may use. And they're all called different things, and every director calls them something different. So, long-winded way of saying, of just making sure, you know, you're on the same page as your technical director.
And traditionally, is the director is obviously talking the most. Does the technical director still have a mic on their headset to talk? Because they usually sit side by side, right? In the truck.
They do. Yeah. In any truck TV environment, it usually goes producer, director. It usually goes AD, which is assistant director, associate director, assistant director, depending on what network you're on, producer, director, technical director. And the producer and the director talk the most. The director is pretty much exclusively talking to cameras, replay, and graphics. Oh, graphics is another big one about how you're going to call it. How are you going to, when you insert font one, or when you open up font one, what are you going to call it? Are you going to say open font one, insert font one? And then when you want a graphic to fire, oh my gosh, there's a million different ways to say that. Some people say fly it in, fly it out. Some people say animate, deanimate, which I think is dumb because deanimate's not a word. I like insert font one and animate and lose it. But even that gets a little confusing to some people because the TD doesn't know if I want them to lose it and just close the key, or if the graphic wants to fly it out. So a lot of times I have to clarify that. And sometimes as a director, I have to change my vernacular in my vocabulary to match what a graphic operator is doing. A TD will have a headset on. Generally, if I'm a TD, I keep my ear open. So single-sided headset, right? I keep my open ear to the director because I can just hear him better there. I don't need to hear him in my headset. I can hear him right there. And my other side is really for me talking to tape, and I'll barely say anything, or cameras, or and it's really only technical stuff. So like a big thing, I'll get on with tape coming back from a break. Let's say we're running a pre-produced element, and I as the TD want to be able to trigger the play on that and not have the replay operator play it. I'll just get in there real quick and I'll be like, Hey Rob, this is my trigger. So they know, so they're not sitting there trying to hit play, but they know they can back me up then. Right. So it's really for one-off incidental stuff. I'm usually not trying to say anything while the director and producer are working, because I don't want to get in their way, but I do ask the director a lot of times. And I think a lot of TDs, especially young TDs, are afraid to do this, to clarify things. If I'm not sure what they mean, it's better to be a moment late and say, you want me to go here, and have them say yes or no, then be wrong. Right. So if they say something we didn't go over, or if they say something that I didn't quite hear, or a lot of times what happens is the producer will say one thing and the director will say another thing. And usually it's a producer's call on like storyline. Like the producer might be like, okay, we're going with A to break. And if the director goes, okay, ready effect to B. And I go, you mean A? Right. Like that's your job as a TD, to kind of like back them up. And usually the director's like, yeah. A, you know, that type of stuff happens a lot. So that's really the dance you're doing as a TD, is you're trying to be as helpful as possible, but also stay out of the way.
And obviously the boards can get very complicated for a TD. From very, very basic. If you're a run and gun operation and don't have a ton of budget, from a live stream type board where it's all single buttons, to you know, a huge Grass Valley switcher where you have all sorts of different options and options within options of each button.
Yeah, and I think that gap is bridged a little bit technically. I've seen plenty in the past, you know, 5-10 years of competent broadcasts done on TriCasters, you know, and ATEMs, and sometimes you got to be a little resourceful to do what you want to do on it, right? To do the wipes you want to do and the splits and the Emmys you want to do, but you can do it. And if the end product looks the same, who cares? But it's definitely a lot easier and gives you a lot more options if you're working on a Grass Valley, you know, or something of that nature, Ross, a bigger switcher. Not that those are the only two that do it. There's definitely more. But the bigger the switcher, the easier it is to make your show. At Notre Dame, we had 8 Emmys on our switcher, which was just, it was a luxury, right? So when I was building stuff, I didn't have to worry about running out of ME resources.
It sounds like you're saying ME.
No. ME mixed effect, M/E, mix effect bus. We had 8 of them plus backsides for it all. And not to go too deep in the weeds there, but it was such a luxury. But then I would go do a truck show and it'd be a smaller show and they'd have 3 MEs and I'd struggle a little bit to build that show and make it competent. And sometimes as a TD, you just have to turn to a director and just say, we cannot technically do that. And that's okay. That's an answer. Unless it's Sunday Night Football, you know, that's an answer you can say. And directors and producers are going to understand.
So it seems like the next natural place to go here is probably to graphics, because we've talked a little bit about flying them in, animating them, or de-animating them, yeah. Right? That's the preference.
Real quick, before we get there, I want to go to one position that I think is really mysterious to a lot of people, but is super key and important, and that's the AD, the associate or assistant director, depending on what network you're on. I always thought that name was weird because it's not like they really assist the director or they associately direct anything. What they do is they are really, really in charge of their biggest job is talking to master control and counting to and from break. They're the ones who are coordinating studio cut-ins when, you know, Kevin Harlan's doing NBA and he says, hey, let's go back to the studio, you know, or not NBA, but I'm thinking NCAA March Madness, you know, they're doing the studio cut-ins at CAD. Coming back from break, the AD will be like, hey, studio wants to take this out of break. We need mix minus, you know, and you're feeding that back into the talent's ear so they can hear it. So they can say something funny and laugh about it and all that coordination that seems totally seamless on air. That's what the AD does. The AD is also in charge of timing and timing every single thing. They need numbers and times on every element that happens, every out. Every soft out and hard out, right? By soft out, I mean where you want to get out of the piece and then the pad, and then the end of the pad is a hard out, right? And being an AD is extremely hard, and it's like the most thankless job in the world. You get blamed for it, and everything goes, you get blamed all the time when something goes wrong, and you get absolutely no praise when you do your job extremely well. But they work with tape to make sure tape has all the elements loaded in, right? Like all the front ends, all the everything you'd put on a package, all the pre-produced elements. They're in charge of coordinating all that and getting all that in. It's an extremely important job, but one that is so necessary and overlooked. And they're a front bench position. And what I mean by front bench position, I mean people who literally sit on the front bench, which is usually TD, producer, director, AD.
Yeah, right in front of the huge wall of monitors is
right.
What you're...
Exactly. Yeah. Because they need a large monitor wall because they're watching all the tape machines with countdown timers on all of them. They usually have a net return. They usually have a time of day clock. They're also the ones at the end of the game when you're trying to figure out if your windows, if you're past your window, if you have to fill, and then negotiating with studio to try and not fill because filling sucks, trying to get us off the air, count us off. It's an extremely important position. But yeah, moving back to graphics, how many graphics operators are on the show is generally dependent on how big the show is, and what network it is. For trucks, you know, large shows like Sunday Night Football have just an entire graphics truck, right? With multiple graphics operators and multiple statisticians. And multiple of what we call APs, associate producers, assistant producer, depending on the network, or faunassist. I believe NBC calls them faunassist. But what they're doing is they're basically sitting next to the graphics operators and literally telling them what to type where for stats, what graphics to make, where the shells are. They're kind of producing graphics behind the scenes and then selling that to producer. So let's say, you know... let's say, you know, LeBron James has hit 25 of his last 33s over 3 games, whatever it is, right? They're making that graphic real quick. They're going to put it in preview and they're going to sell the producer and they're going to say, hey, look at Canvas. And then the producer will be like, yeah, let's do it. And the director will say, okay, insert font 1, animate, you know, and all of a sudden you have this thing that seems like it was seamless and pre-planned, but it wasn't. It was a lot of the graphics operator and the AP or font assist making that in real time, working with statisticians to chase it down, and then selling that to the front bench. So AP, another one of those jobs that that's, again, a little overlooked, but extremely important. They're also in charge of kind of like the ideas with replay, with graphics, making sure they have all their elements, all their shells, everything's on brand, sponsors. That's the other thing I forgot on the AD side. The AD side is in charge of making sure that all sponsored elements get hit. And the AP is in charge of the graphic side of making sure that those elements are there. But the AD will literally have a checklist in front of them being like, well, we got to do State Farm, you know, two times a half. You know, we've got to do our own internal promos two times a half. We've got to run this one specialty promo back from break once a half, you know, and they're literally sitting there and arguing with the producer because the producer never wants to do it. As a storyteller, the director never wants to do it because that doesn't help storytelling. Sometimes it does, but most of the time it's not. You know, it's paying the bills, as everybody calls it. So they're usually arguing with the producer, and the producer's like, I don't want to do it here. We're in a big moment. They're like, we got to do it. This is our last chance. We're going to get yelled at, you know, like, and it's this constant battle that I absolutely love of just like, we got to do this. When are we going to do this? How's this going to fit in? How are we going to tell the best story? And you're doing it all on the fly, which is wild. So that's kind of the AD, AP, and then into graphics land. And again, I'm speaking from a live TV standpoint. A video board show generally wouldn't have an AD or an AP, but you might. It all depends on the show, how big it is. I had an AD at Notre Dame, but it wasn't to do really that. They talked to the AD in the truck to coordinate when the truck was going and coming from break. We were basically just listening to them and asking, are you going here? Are you not going here? So we could get our breaks in. But then that show, since we had such a good relationship with NBC, we took every single camera angle from NBC and NBC took every single camera angle from us. So on a big game, like my first year when Georgia came in, we had 42 cameras. And as a director who's also trying to call replays, I can't watch 42 cameras. So I had our assistant director, Jay Galloway, who was an AD for ESPN forever, basically just watch some things for me, like Skycam and Jib, some super safe shots from NBC that are going to get some cool stuff, but I can't pay attention to all the time and I'm not directing them. So, you know, every once in a while, like during pregame or something, Jay would just be like, ooh, look at 43, you know, and I look over and then I take 43. So just because the AD role is one way, one place, doesn't mean that the AD role doesn't mean you can't use that in a video board type scenario for different reasons. But yeah, just, I'm mostly focusing on the live TV side here.
Yeah, I would almost say that that AD role probably gets rolled in with the producer more often than not if you're on a
exactly
break screen show.
And that's what you find a lot on big screen shows, is you find a lot of these multi-role type things. Not because the show is any less important, it's not. You can just be more efficient in that environment when you're not worried about things like master control and an air path and commercial coordination, you know, and those types of things. You can combine those things more effectively than you can in a TV truck.
Yeah, less resources usually cut back on some of those elements, and it doesn't necessarily mean you do. I mean, the more complex and the bigger the show, obviously, the more specialized it seems like people get in what they do.
And I should say that before we move on, I should say there are shows, TV shows that happen all the time on linear TV where there's a TD director, right? I TD directed a show on NBCSN, right? Like, just because the resources weren't there, and that was the level of show we were doing. I was basically doing like a world feed type show. And I had three cameras of my own, right? Almost like a split bench. But again, it happens. So don't think of like, oh, every single TV production is this big, huge, gigantic thing. It's not. It all depends on the show, the level of the show, how many cameras you have, time slot, all that stuff.
When you bring in graphics, one of the biggest differences with live switching a graphic versus actually creating a graphic that you insert in post is the keying element.
All that, and you got to spell everything right. It's got to be correct. There are so many graphics that are wrong, and it's tough because it's live TV, and it's just like you look at it, you see it, and you're just like, oh, that's wrong. Just close it. But you don't want to close it and make it look like a mistake, right? By the way, that's usually my vernacular. If I say lose it, that means I want the graphics to animate it out. If I say close it, it means I want the TD to close the font. Sorry, a little aside there. But the biggest thing I think mistakes that new people make, new directors, young directors, is they see a mistake on screen and it's like, oh my God, I got to get off it so fast. Well, then you draw attention to it because it looks like a mistake, right? I get it. If somebody's doing something lewd on camera, like a fan or something, you got to get away from that quick. But if it's a graphic and Zion Williamson's name is spelled without an I in his last name, it's like, just, it's wrong. It just, leave it. You taking it off screen quickly isn't going to make it less wrong. But it's going to draw more attention to it, in my opinion. But yeah. And then keying it. Yeah. Every single graphics machine, for one channel, will have a key and a fill channel. You know, an alpha and a matte, which if you work in the post world, you know what that is. It's a black and the white, you know, if you've ever seen unshaped, non-pre-multiplied, key channels. It's basically, here's a channel to, tell you the color and the fill information. And here's a channel that's just black and white. That's going to tell you the alpha information, and the switcher, you know, pushes that together. And that's what creates transparency in the live world.
Cool. So let's get into some mixing of audio. Start with the A1.
Yeah. Again, another little mysterious side of the industry is, what's an A1? What's an A2? An A1 is your primary show mixer. They're the person actually running the board, you know, creating a mic placement plan, dealing with RF signals, making sure that's all coordinated and all that stuff. They're also unloading music to go to and from break, working with the network if there's any copyrighted music. You know how I feel about audio and video. Audio is the most important part of video. And I think a good A1 is worth their weight in gold. And a bad A1 can ruin your show. But the A1 is also in charge of all the A2s. And the A2s are really the ones who are out on the field deploying the gear, making sure it works. Comms is another big one. The A1 has to worry about comms and get everybody's comms panels set up in a truck.
Again, and that's communication to the cameras. To the
cameras,
truck.
Panels between positions to master control, from master control, mix minuses, getting in remote feeds, making sure that all sounds good. That all falls on the A1. This is another one of those positions that you don't necessarily have on a live video board production. But you do have an in-house sound person, right? And that person may fall under your purview. They may fall under a different AV group's purview, but kind of similar roles there. They're just mixing for speakers in a venue versus a mix for TV at home.
Yeah, can we dive in? There's a couple things I want to dive into a little bit more here. Can you explain what a mix minus is?
Yeah, mix minus is basically a foldback, or when you are a announcer, you don't want to hear yourself back. You want to hear side tone, but you don't want to hear yourself back in a mix, you know? So like if you're doing a mix minus from the studio, you only want to hear the studio announcers. You want to hear the studio announcers minus your live announcers, right? Because there'd be a little bit of a delay. And anytime, I don't know if you've ever tried to talk with a delay, with yourself delayed in your ear. But it's like it's a gigantic mental block. Your voice like cancels itself out. And it's really hard to speak when that happens. So that's what mix minuses are for, is to make sure there's no delay when you fold back that announcer's audio back in their ear. You want to make sure they're not there. They're only hearing real time side tone, which I'm pointing at my headphones right now. You can't see this on the podcast, but I'm pointing at my headphones because I have side tone in my headphones right now. So I can just hear myself in real time. But my side tone happens on my processing unit directly. It's not going through my computer and Audition and then coming back, because if it did, it would be delayed because there's processing there. It probably wouldn't be enough for me to like really struggle with. But technically I'm making a mix minus of just you right now, minus myself. So yeah, no, good question. Mix minuses are extremely important in the broadcast.
And the one other thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned there is RF. And I think, you know, there's been a couple questions about what range people should buy you know, wireless communications for, and some of that. So I think that's probably an important one to touch on. And, you know, when I was in the NFL, we always had to check in with the RF coordinator for every single game.
Yep. So the NFL does a really good job. The NFL does a really good job of that. And not that other leagues don't, but like in the college space, it can be tough. And that spectrum is getting more limited. My feeling on wireless audio is don't do it unless you have to. It can be convenient. We've talked about this before. I don't need to go into it. But the same goes for live production. If you don't have to do it, don't do it, especially in live, because you can run out of batteries. But there's plenty of times where you do, like a sideline reporter or things like that. And when you talk about range and cost are directly related, right? Transmitter packs are rated in milliwatts. And a low milliwatt pack, like a 25 or 50 milliwatt pack, probably isn't going to get you very far away from your receive unit. Whereas 100, 200, even 250 milliwatt pack can get you quite a bit further away. It also depends on your antenna setup. Do you have one antenna? Do you have diversity where you have multiple antennas and it picks the best one and goes between them? For a live broadcast, you know, anytime you see those little Shure shark fins set up or RF venue shark fins antennas, those are antennas. Usually there's more than one. They're set up in diversity and they're doing just that. They're taking the sideline. It's usually with a little fly pack rack cart. And that's what's containing the receive gear. And then that's going just line level back to the truck. But yeah, the spectrum is getting more and more squeezed. And a big reason because of that is the government just sold the 600 megahertz band to T-Mobile. So we're losing that. And there was a lot of RF audio gear, 600 megahertz and up. So now you've narrowed that band. When digital television became a thing back in HD, those sit where RF audio used to sit as well. And it's always good if you're going out into the field for post-production or live production to have an RF scanner or know somebody who has an RF scanner, because you can see where those digital TV stations are. Military radar is another big one, and they don't have to announce themselves at all. They can turn on and turn off whenever they want. Sometimes they can be way up in the 6 gigahertz range. Sometimes they're in the 400, 500 megahertz range, and you just don't know it until you scan it. So now we're trying to cram everybody in this 400 to 550 megahertz spectrum. And that's not a very wide spectrum, especially you get into, you know, big time college football game with no frequency coordination. And you have 5 different local TV stations all with their wireless mics because they don't want to plug in and they just want to turn on a wireless mic. And all of a sudden you have something that worked every rehearsal day up until the show, and somebody comes in right next to you and turns on their transmitter in the same frequency and it doesn't work anymore. Sorry, a little tangent there. That's not really this podcast, but I have some strong feelings on RF and people who don't register their frequencies.
Yeah, we run into that a lot too. Yeah,
that's why it's important, and that's why the NFL does a good job with it. They know how important it is.
Especially when you're micing players, you don't want people to step on you.
Exactly. You can't have people step on you. And if you come into an NFL stadium with an unregistered RF device, even if you're not using it, they will take it. They're within their right to do so on that. Or you have to go register it to get it back. So it's important, you know, and it doesn't hurt. If you're out there, you're doing a show and you're walking around, you're an A2. That's part of the A2's job, too. And you see somebody firing up, it doesn't hurt to go over and be like, hey, what frequency are you on? You know, and just make sure they're avoiding where you at, because it's a lot easier for them to change their little Sennheiser pack than it is for you to change a large amount of, you know, electrosonics packs that you might have on 4 or 5 different people.
So the types of audio that the A1 is mixing can be obviously the announcers. You have parabolic mics that are down on the field that are trying to pick up the NAT sound. You have other mics that are placed for NAT sound. You have, you know, the reporter mic that needs to come up and down based on when they want to talk. So is there anything I'm missing in that?
Replay boxes, spot boxes, graphics channels that make noise. Their music playback machine. It's a large show to mix, and a lot of that has to get sub mixed down to a couple different faders, you know, so it's a little bit more manageable. And now, during COVID, they have to mix in their own crowd noise too, right? It's not a nap mic. It's, and some of that has to be reactionary too. And I haven't worked a COVID production like that, so I don't totally know if that responsibility is split out to somebody else, but you know, that's a lot. On top of that, they're in charge of creating multiple different feeds that need to go back down the transmission path, an international feed, a feed that is what we call sanitized, where if you have commercial music, generally you only have rights to that commercial music in certain regions and for a certain amount of time. So if I'm sitting here and I want to play the hottest Beyonce song going to break, when I hit that on my playback machine, I have to create a mix that's that Beyonce song. But when I hit that button, I also have to make sure on a different channel that doesn't get heard by the national viewers, a different song gets played at the same time. That's doesn't have the same rights. Right. So that way it can get sanitized. When they lose the rights to that music, or if it's going out internationally to someplace they don't have the rights, Master Control uses that mix instead of the main mix. On top of that, a lot of times they have to worry about a surround sound, 5.1 mix. Sometimes that's done in Master Control. A lot of times it's done on site in the truck or the control room you're in. You're looking at anywhere from 8 to 16 channels of audio minimum, just going back down the transmission path, just to get people what they want and what they need where they need it.
I'll tell you what's been really cool is for us after the NBA bubble experience is all of the audio being separated, because you hear all the NAT sound of the gameplay, and because the crowd is mixed separately, it comes in on a different channel, so we can essentially have our own sound effects built in,
right?
That we can take from that. So that's cool.
What I would do. Well, not me, but we at the Chiefs, what we would do is when we had good NAT sound like that, we would just clip it and save it, right? Because we got all of our channels separated from the melt. So it was nice. Anytime you had something really good, you just clip it and save it to your good folder, you know? So when you needed to put it in later or to amp something up or to reinforce something, you know, you kind of had a nice little library of real reaction in your environment that sounds natural. But yeah, audio is a really, really hard job. And it's one of those things, if you do it well, you don't really notice it, you know, but if you do it poorly, people will know right away.
Yeah, it's like Keith Jackson used to say, if nobody knows I'm doing the game, then I'm doing it right. Where else can we go?
You know, I think we tangentially talked about a lot of the positions. You know, I think we're a lot of people are going to get their start in the live industry is going to be a PA and a runner. So I think it's good to explain that. And a PA or a runner, they're interchangeable. Production assistant is basically just a gopher. You are there to do whatever the production needs. And you're really reporting to, here's one we haven't talked about, the tech manager. And the tech manager's role is a unique one. They're basically in charge of signing the crew in and out, but they're in charge. They're really the liaison between production and the tech crew and the engineering side.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Shader.
Yeah, and we can get to that too. But the tech manager, really, they put together the tech plan, the large books that come out with where all the cameras are. They're mapping out where all the drops are that engineers and camera operators are going to plug into, the feeds coming in and out, where things are going into replay. They're working with the producer and director to make sure that lights are where they need to be. They're really in charge of the technical layout of the entire show and then relaying the producer and director's vision to the EIC of the truck or the control room and making sure that gets executed correctly. They're also generally the ones telling runners and PAs what to go do, when and where. And that leads well into shaders, which are V1s. V1s and V2s. V1s do kind of what we just talked about. They shade. They're the ones in charge of making sure the cameras look good. White balance, exposures correct. They're matching the feeds that they need to match. Like if you have a, Sony 4300s all throughout your show, but then you have three Marshall POVs. So those Marshall POVs need to look like the Sony 4300s, and painting and matching those and making sure those are all good to go. another extremely important job that can be tough. If you ever see, you know,
outdoor stadiums and the NFL,
usually like those noon. Yeah. Outdoor stadiums at noon. Right. Shading, it's getting better with HDR. You have to do less of it, but shading between the light area and the dark area, shadowy area. That's all a shader doing that live, you know, or at least setting boundaries on like an auto exposure to do it a little bit for them. That's a V1 and that's what shading does. So no good. That made me realize a couple that we had overlooked there. And again, you overlook them because the jobs are so important, but usually such a good job is done, you kind of don't think about it because they do their job so well.
Yeah. So I guess just building off of what Becca's conversation from a couple episodes ago and hearing Brock and Garrett and myself all talk about, you know, taking advantage of your opportunities. If you get on as a runner or a PA for a live event or a production, now hopefully you have a better idea of what each of those different people are doing so that you can ask them questions and see if you can pick their brain and understand how they're doing their job.
Yeah, and there's going to be jobs that I totally forgot to mention on this that are out there. I apologize to anybody's job who I didn't mention. But I think the thing to take from this is there are tons of jobs on any live production for in-venue or a TV show, and they're all extremely important. None of them are very expendable.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.